In the open letter beginning his newest book, Buffalo Head Solos, Tim Siebels writes that what energizes him to write is, quote, all the naysaying I hear about what poets and poetry can do. Poetry will never reach the general public. Poetry shouldn't be political or argumentative. Poetry will not succeed if it's excessively imaginative. Poetry can't change anything. Because the first people I heard saying such things were poets, I used to believe these notions were born of thoughtful consideration and humility. But now I see them as a kind of preemptive apology, a small-hearted justification for the writing of a hobbled poetry that knows its place, that doesn't mean to trouble the water, that it is always decorous and never stomps in with bad breath or plaid boots. But why not, Siebels asks, why not a sublimely reckless poetry when the ascendant social order permits nearly every type of corruption and hypocrisy? What the hell happened to the notion of poet as town crier, rabble-rouser, court jester, priestess, visionary, madman? End quote. Except for the priestess, Tim Siebels is all of these things. He writes big-hearted poems, fierce lyrics and reckless narratives that sometimes rant and sometimes make us laugh and sometimes simply tell it like it is. He's an American and proud of it, but like most everybody I know, disappointed and embarrassed at, as he says, quote, a society so accustomed to semi-literate buffoonery that many of us find it acceptable in those who hold even the highest offices. He's a lyric poet who loves to tell stories. He's a sermon giver who loves wordplay and jazzy repetition. He's a persona poet equally at home in the hairy skin of the bonobo ape and the exoskeleton of a lobster. Hope you read the lobster poem, by the way. He's a big black guy with a name that doesn't sound very black. He's the author of Hammerlock, Hurdy Gurdy, Body Moves, and Buffalo Head Solos. He is a former NEA fellow. He's a teacher at Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia. He's also my pal and great fun to hang out with. Please welcome Tim Siebels.
It's really nice to be here. It's an honor to be part of the River Styx series. I've heard so much about it over the years. Thanks, Richard, and all of you. I know there are too many fine writers out there, so I'm just going to say I appreciate you being here, and thank you kindly. And it was also great to come here because I got to have a small reunion with John Tiemann. We were in undergraduate workshops together at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, and we haven't really seen each other in about 23, 24 years. So, you know, now we're just old and jaded. What I'd like to do is, I'll probably read mostly from the new book, but I'll read from the last three books, I guess, all around, and maybe one new poem. Just kind of bounce around in terms of mood and subject matter. First poem is called Hardy. It's H-A-R-D-I-E. It was a slang I grew up with in Philadelphia, and it'll be explained in the poem. Let me grab this water. Hardy. You know how tiny kids walk up to you, raise their arms, and expect to be picked up? I used to do that. That was me. Me with my diaper full and my nose half crusty. I remember being eye to eye with the little doors underneath the kitchen sink. I was a child, seriously. I used to yank open those cabinets and see the shiny colors in glass, the orange box of Tide, the pink bottle leaking dishwashing liquid, a green pine saw thing with big yellow letters. Of course, I couldn't read, and before I could touch anything, my mom was snatching me back, slapping my hands. That shit hurt. My hands were really little, really new, like shoots fresh out of the ground, really soft. I was a child. Is that clear? People just put me to bed whenever they felt like it. People sat me on the potty every other whenever and said, go. I didn't have any words, just sloppy, muddy kinds of garbled clucks that wanted to be words, that tried to be wordish. Think of the amount of criticism I got. Criticism piled on like cold cream of wheat. It was like I couldn't do anything right. Not a goddamn thing. Picture me in a high chair being pressured to eat. They might have been dangling a secret agent off a cliff trying to make him give up something top secret. I was little. My legs hardly held me up. Everybody stood around poised to catch me. Oops, whoopsie, whoops-a-daisy. How could I get my confidence? But now I'm big. I eat ice cream all the time. I'm big. I use the men's room. Nobody tells me what to do. Even though I feel like I'm holding on to my life the way a wounded ant clings to a window screen, I'm big now, big and musty, big enough to hide my baby shoes in the palm of one hand. But once I was a kid, I didn't need deodorants. I sat on my grandmother's lap and ate candy spearmint leaves. I wasn't down on white people. I didn't even know I was black. My whole bag was cartoons. I was a child, goddammit. Just a mouthful of Tonka toys and Lego. A little guy with no sense of time passing. Where was everybody going? Whatever happened to Johnny Quest? Next thing I know, I got this hearty thumping around on my belly. Every morning, fearless, like my own badass rooster. Sun up and cock-a-doodle-doo. I couldn't pee with it, and nobody would tell me what it was for. I wasn't always so worldly. I wasn't always a madman over women's legs, either. I spent my first 15 years without a real kiss. I was a child. You think I don't remember? You think it's easy keeping all this innocence pent up inside? And now, when it comes to money, I'm like some dizzy insect full of wanting it. Like some big blue bottle fly tipsy over a mound of shit. I wasn't always like this. Parts of me started getting large, growing hair, my underarms, my wrists, even the tops of my feet. But I was a little boy once, really curious, really small, really scared. Is that clear? This is a poem called What Bugs Bunny Said to Red Riding Hood. It's in the voice of Bugs Bunny. Say, good looking, what brings you out this away amongst the fanged and the fluffy? Grandma, huh? Some old bag too lazy to pick up a pot? Too feeble to flip a flapjack? And you all dolled up like a fire engine to cruise these woods? This was your mother's idea? She been living in a Cracker Jack box or something? This is a tough neighborhood, mutton chops. You got your badgers, your wild boar, your hardcore grizzlies. And lately, this one wolf's been acting pretty big and bad. I mean, what's up, Doc? Didn't anybody ever tell you it ain't smart to stick out in wild places? Friendly? You want friendly, you better try Detroit. I mean, you're safe with me, sweet cakes, but I ain't a meat eater. You heard about Goldilocks, didn't you? Well, didn't you? Yeah, well, little Miss Sunshine, little Miss I'm so much cuter than thee, got caught on one of her sneaky porridge runs, and the three bears weren't in the mood. So last week, the game warden nabs Baby Bear, passing out her fingers to his pals. That's right. Maybe your mother should turn off her soaps, take a peek at a newspaper, turn on some cartoons for Pete's sake. This world is about teeth, Bubble Buns. Who's biting and who's getting bit? The nerve of that broad singing out here looking like a ripe tomato. Why don't you just hang a sign around your neck? Get over here and bite my legs off. Cover me with mustard. Call me a hot dog. All right, I'll stop. Listen, Red, I'd hate for something unpleasant to find you out here all alone. Grandma Schmanma, let her call Domino's. They're paid to deliver. Besides, Toots, it's already later than you think. Get a load of that chubby moon up there. You can't count on Casper tonight either. They ran that potato head out of town 2 months ago, trying to make friends all the time. He makes you sick after a while. Look, Cinderella, I got some candles and some cold on cola back at my place. What do you say? Got any artichokes in that basket? Figure it is President's Day, so I'll read a couple of poems that make some presidential references. Anyway, this is a poem I wrote right around the Christmas after 9/11. There was a bumper sticker going around. I don't know if they had it here, but in Virginia, you could find these bumper stickers that said "Work and Win." Did you guys have that? No, we had them in Virginia. So this poem is called Christmas 2001, and the epigraph is "Work and Win." I should say this, I make reference, probably this is already known, but Semper Fi, some of you must know. That's like the Marines thing, always faithful. I use that term, and also I refer to a dum-dum round, which is a bullet that hits and tumbles so that it makes a larger and larger wound. It goes in small, comes out large. That's all I should say. Christmas 2001, work and win. Someone ties two blue balloons to your eyelids. Rise and shine. The new sun smears the dark like a paw. Tuesday, just like last week, Tuesday. And hooray, it's still America still. With all the flags, with 'tis the season, and that thing in the White House. Ho, 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 death, like oil gushing, like a mouthful of mistletoe, like honey on your fingers, like a population not actually thinking. You're beginning to understand this is what happened to freedom. Dumb fuckery in the first degree, and big cigars in all the offices. On Dasher, on Blitzen, busy, Santa's little soldiers. Semper Fi, your bashful taxes dressed up and deployed whenever, wherever your country gets interested in protecting your interests, the ones you wished for. One vote, one wish. One wish per citizen. Every vote, a kiss on the plump cheek of a nation that sang like a dim Ah, Chris E, but often acted like something unrelated. If a dum-dum round ripped open your head right now, they'd find one of Snow White's dwarves, dopey or sleepy, still spinning the wheel, as if this had been a fairy tale all along. Once upon a time, you fa-la-la-la-la felt lucky to be American. And of course you are. Clean water, animals glad to be meat, Michael Jordan, MTV, Harry Potter books to read, and jobs, your job. A jobby job, a job to live for. Get up, up, up. But this morning, there's a kind of light that fits like a door closing on the world. Like getting older, like a cold you can't quite cure. Like the official smile and news from Jerusalem, like a suicide bomber in Chicago, fingering directions, dashing through the snow. This is a poem called Appetite. I make reference to Flo-Jo, and some of you remember Florence Griffith Joyner, the fastest woman in the world. I think her 200-meter record still stands, I believe. I think otherwise everything is self-explanatory. Appetite. I have eaten the donuts, the plain cake, healthy whole wheat donuts. I have eaten them quickly the way the highway chews the dark licorice of Firestone tires. I have savored the cakey flavor with a born-again gleam in my smile, with my heart turned wild as a one-eyed pirate with treasure on his breath. I have eaten my way southerly and northerly and side to side, tasting donuts from every angle the way a blind man might try the legs of certain women. Women in blue jean skirts unbuttoned to mid-thigh. Proud women who stroll the blue boulevards of summer wearing a thin glaze of sweat like a damp halo on their labia. I have eaten the fig Newtons, too. All night without stopping, all night the way witches roll moonlight like taffy on their tongues. I did it in the kitchen. I did it on the lawn. I did it as though my soul were just a jaw chewing my life into new hungers. I attacked without reason like a great Afro-American shark, finning the crowded streets of America, my nappy dorsals splitting the air, the pale victims going down fast like fig Newtons into a man mad for that gushy feel, that soft cookie flavor. And the pretzels, those laced boomerangs of bread through which a black finger might drift like a thunderhead through the sky's sheer blouse. I've eaten them all except for one, crouched like a felon behind that bag of barbecue chips. But he is mine. I will eat him as surely as Europe ate South America. Just knock on his door tomorrow. No one will answer. And I regret nothing. And I am not sorry. And I don't feel bad about wanting so much of what I like. Some days I sit all afternoon leering at a box of ginger snaps. Other times, without warning, I am biting big chunks out of something, just like Flojo yums up the meters with her big stride. With my hands and eyes, I am riding teeth first across this life, as if my appetite were the only way out of this lonely skin I'm stuck inside. But it's late. Night nibbles the city, and all the avenues cool wantonly like cakes. It's a poem called Visions. It's written after a poem by Stephen Dobbins. I think his poem was, the poem is called How to Like It, his poem from his book, Cemetery Nights. This is called Visions. These are the last days of summer. The sky, the cool colors of sunset make you think of things you had wanted to do in July, but put off till August. And now, September leans against your screen door like the sort of friend you try to avoid, but who catches your eye, waves, and comes in. A man and his cat step outside. The cat says, I don't know about you, but I'm about ready to kick somebody in the ass. This is the way cats confront the weight of broken promises and perceived injustice. However, from his position, one hand on the railing, the ghost-like shadow of an oak branch grabbing his shoulder, the man sees how flimsy his life has become. His aching wishes that dwarfed the city when he was young, now scraddle and ratch like dead leaves in a schoolyard. The cat says, all these sultry sallies out here and don't nobody want to make my mojo grow? I got 6 inches of bulging hallelujah. Let's say somebody's gonna get religion and pretty damn soon. The cat believes in sex and the healing power of conjoined flesh. He believes the right kiss could relieve the tongue glitch that dribbles L's all over his speech. Across the street, outside the 7-Eleven, the man sees a woman in cut-off jeans. Like Mary, a little bit, he mutters. Her hair curls a little like Mary's. He remembers certain nights, her apartment, the almost musical refrain of her hips, the delicious way they had fit together, pleasure swelling the room like the smell of good cooking. But it's been years since he's touched her or even heard her voice. So what about all those wonderful shapes they'd made? And for a moment, he saw himself from a distance, standing on the porch, the tree shadow striping his brown slacks through the railing. Like a detail you'd catch in a novel, he thinks. The story of someone beginning to be older than younger. I feel so many feelings, he sighs, blinking at the furry blockhead of the Tom. Like a thousand grudges in my heart, like lemmings filling the first foot of air off a cliff, some twisting with regret, some glad, some... If the cat could roll his eyes, he would. Let's go over to the rich neighborhood and just tear shit up. Let's hurt white people for no apparent reason. Oh, shut up, the man spits. In the man's mind, he is flying, a superhero suddenly soaring across orchards and seas. He's the Green Lantern. And as night inks out day, he watches cities flare up. The street lamps, then Burger Kings, bars, marquees, tall buildings downtown. In his eyes, the gazillion headlights lace the whole globe in pale gold. It looks like a thing someone might have given as a gift, a planet made for luck, an amulet the size of a world, dangling from Athena's dark wrist. You can kiss my flurry ass, the cat sneers. I'm gonna get me a Budweiser. Then I'ma piss on your sneakers. But the man wants to know why living is almost always only slightly bearable. How had he come to the point where every day left him swooning like some chump trapped in a gas station bathroom? And what did Martin Luther King mean when he said he'd seen the promised land? Where had he seen it? Where did it go? The man tries to picture the mountaintop, the huge maples spreading their perfect purple shade, citizens flaunting only their fine skins, a place where anybody could kiss anybody anytime anybody wanted. But that's not it, really. He squints. There'd be time to disagree. He didn't want a bunch of naked people smiling everywhere. He just didn't want it all to seem so fucking insane. The man mashes his hand against his forehead as if microscopic commandos are needling teeny-weeny bayonets into his brain. He's just about ready to make somebody pay. But the cat bumps his beige head against the man's shin. Hey, let's just hang out on the couch. Let's go get some tuna fish and check out some TV. Let's watch Bill Cosby till our skulls collapse. So that's what they do. And that's where the man's landlord finds him days later, staring at the luminous screen, as if into the mouth of God, the mouth where all the beautiful visions are kept, visions of what to eat and which computer seems more personal, which douche is pH balanced, and what trucks are built Ford Tough. The visions showing why every morning you haul yourself up, and which ice-brewed beer owns the night. Visions of what's on next and why you'll like it. Thanks, man. I just need to shuttle water back and forth every minute. Okay. This is a poem called 2005. It's a riff off the Villanelle form. Not that that means anything. You'll hear the shape of it, a couple of repeating lines and so on. Just called 2005. I mean, I don't know. I imagine I'm not the only person in here who finds themselves, you know, on a daily basis trying to like lift yourself out of abject despair. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm trying to be positive, you know, but... So anyway, this poem, this is me trying to talk about that, I guess. 2005. This late has gotten later, and my soul begins to slouch. I used to think the future had been waiting up for me. We stumble all around the world, and then we stumble out. A broken head, a breaded heart, some lynching north and south. 10 grains of sand inside one clam, 10 pearls I'd sing for free. I stumbled in and played some verbs, and soon I'll tumble out. I tell myself to celebrate, the sky's a rainbow trout. A glance, a smile, a chance of hearts, a whelming kiss to be. But blight has burned the furnace, and my soul begins to slouch. I'd like to meet the president and punch him in the mouth. My blood strummed thick with words sometimes. I thought I'd sing us free. I mumble everywhere I go, and soon I'll grumble out. Now half the days I guess my face and act like there's no doubt. Do shadow shapes that branches make mean something to the tree? This stark begins to darken and my heart begins to slouch. The leagues, the teams, the superstars, the happy fans all shout. I sang inside the spider's house, pretending to be free. We stumble all around this place, and then they take us out. I think I thought most everyone just wanted to hang out. A pleasant walk, some pleasant talk, the door, the trusty key. But war plays on in Baghdad, and my soul slumps on the couch. If I could kiss life on the lips, I'd love her till she wheezed. And then I'd buy the world a Coke and dump it in the street. We grumble all around the world before we stumble out. But first, let's meet the president and slug him in the mouth. It's a poem called In a Glance. It's got an epigraph from Rumi. I'll see the epigraph in a second, but I think what this poem wants to talk about is this kind of, I mean, most people have had this experience of looking at someone across a room or maybe in a car that's passing or someone, like it's a moment where you can't really do anything but meet eyes. And sometimes there's a sense of recognition or love or, I don't know, desire, some combination thereof that's exchanged, but it can never be consummated or acted on because the person is like going somewhere else or they're out with their husband or, you know what I mean? It's like you just like there's this moment, you know? Anyway, this poem is called In a Glance. The epigraph is, I'm caught in this curling energy. Your hair, whoever's calm and sensible, is insane. The unseeable scene, that saxophone spilling from the window, a true very soon held between two lips, her smile, for no reason, a carnival quietly placed, a flaze made to bathe in, the right door gliding belightedly up the boulevard. All day, my heart face down, my pulse pecking like a chickadee sick of its short wings, I had hoped some astonishing would scratch the gravel from my eyes. Sunset hatched from a soup can, a tree toad tap dancing with a tadpole, perhaps a meat flag fricasseed above my dumb country. But never the burning wheel of a slow hour, her smile, a glass-blown yes, two maybes dressed in a wish, three buttercups in a jade vase under a blue umbrella, a cello ablaze with me drawing myself along the strings her smile plays. To feel so much, but not go mad enough to shuck the grave in my skull, to scrub and bumble for the glum puppeteer, while my heart, my teeth, my orthopedic verbs strain like mice in a scrum. My voice, bruised and shoeless, goes mumbling the streets, trying to buy a vowel. My alphabet used to be 10 feet long. Every letter a xylophone, a shark's leg, a flubber ballooning my whole soul a holler from the blind church of the unsaid. Her smile, sly melody glad enough to fling the grass afire. Kind season that rings the light beyond her lips. But soft, me, a man collided, the both, the between, the lovely shape of a mind unshaved by reason, over the over, banging into the change. This is called First Kiss. It's dedicated to lips, because everybody has lips of some kind, right? And lips are the beginning of things, eh? First kiss. Her mouth fell into my mouth like a summer snow, like a fifth season, like a fresh Eden, like Eden when Eve made God whimper with the liquid tilt of her hips. Her kiss hurt like that. I mean, it was as if she'd mixed the sweat of an angel with the taste of a tangerine. I swear, my mouth had been a helmet forever greased with secrets. My mouth, a dead-end street a little bit lit by teeth. My heart, a clam slammed shut at the bottom of a dark. But her mouth, pulled up like a baby blue Cadillac packed with canaries, driven by a toucan. I swear, those lips said bright wings when we kissed. Wild and precise, as if she were teaching a seahorse to speak. Her mouth, so careful, chumming the first vowel from my throat, until my brain was a piano banged loud, hammered like that. It was like, I swear, her tongue was Saturn's seventh moon. Hot like that, hot and cold and circling, circling, turning me into a glad planet. Sun on one side, night pouring her slow hand over the other. One fire flying the kite of another. Her kiss, I swear, if the great mother rushed open the moon like a gift and you were there to feel your shadow finally unhooked from your wrist, that'd be it, but even sweeter, like a riot of peg-leg priests on pogo sticks. Up and up, this way and this, not falling, but on and on like that, badly behaved, but holy, I swear. That kiss, both lips utterly committed to the world, like a Peace Corps, like a free store. Forever and always a new city, no locks, no walls, just doors. Like that, I swear, like that. Thank you. You know about the kiss, you know. All right, a couple more and then I'll get out of the way here. Just called Not Spoken. As if thirst were not a wound. As if the thirst for company were not a wound. Consciousness, the one shadow from which light grows. As if all the ache flowed from the same bruise. Near dawn, my blood caught in its circle. I think of your body, your legs opening, and the light hairs strung along your wrists. As if your shoulders, as if the muscular turn of your hips, as if I could tilt your mouth to this dent in my chest. So bit by bit, it becomes unmistakable, this not knowing how to say. As if I had already broken into the last room and found the words still not English. As if being flesh were not call enough. Why stay here to be American, where what is exactly sexual has no country? Let's go. Whole words, whole worlds slow between us, trying to pronounce themselves unlost. The body, the one sacred book. My hands know so little of your hands, the names of pleasure held in chains, taken in ships. Poem called First Verse. I admit the world remains almost beautiful. The dung beetles snap on their iridescent jackets, despite the canine holiness of the Vatican. And despite the great predatory surge of industry, two human hands still mate like butterflies when buttoning a shirt. Some mornings, I take myself away from the television and go outside where the only news comes as fresh air folding over the houses. And I feel glad for an hour in which race and power and all the momentum of history add up to nothing. As if from all the mad grinding in my brain, a single blue lily had grown, my skull open like a lake. I can hear an insect sawing itself into what must be a kind of speech. I know there is little mercy to be found among us, that we have already agreed to go down fighting. But I should be more amazed. Look at the blood, and guess who's holding the knives? Shouldn't we be more amazed? Doesn't the view just blister your eyes? To have come this long way, to stand on two legs, to be not tarantulas or chimpanzees, but soldiers of our own dim-witted enslavement. To utterly miss the door to the enchanted palace, to see myself coined into a stutter, to allow the money to brand us and the believers to blindfold our lives. In the name of what? If that old book was true, the first verse would say, embrace the world, be friendly. The forests are glad you breathe. I see now the earth itself does have a face. If it could say I, it would plead with the universe, the way dinosaurs once growled at the stars. It's like the road behind us is stolen completely, so the future can never arrive. So look at this. Look what we've done with all we knew, with all we knew that we knew. I'll close with this piece. I've been doing, some research on the religions that predate Islam, Christianity, Judaism. And a lot of them were goddess-centered religions. And I'm not saying that they didn't have their problems. But it seemed like there was a really different kind of dynamic in the world, in a lot of those cultures, than in our current world. Anyway, this poem is written with the goddess kind of as a backdrop. And also the idea that in those cultures, the earth really was a woman. You know, like you treated the earth a certain way because it was a woman. You know, you didn't act like it was a toilet. You know what I mean? I don't want to get any deeper than that. But you know what I mean? We have this, something really strange going on in the world right now. And I don't think the big three religions now, or big four, seem to have any sight of how we might transform ourselves. All right, this is called Late Shift. Places may be dreams from which I cannot return. The velvet touch of her lips, first light fingering a cup. Sacred dislocations of mind, the way the right sound becomes visible. Where I am now, it's later. The clocks have been amended to include all the strange hours. And someone cracked my name as if all my life I'd been locked inside. I know the shelves stay stocked. Big cars lead the chase. There's always more and more to eat. But was that ever my country? I was born there. And I'd go back if I could, just to feel less lonely. But what I took to be a certain distance was actually a late shift in myself, a different kind of listening, the voice, a thread of honey, the jar tipped just enough to one side. Listen, we belong to no nation. One day we will hold the earth again as if she were a love nearly lost, her rainy hair tangled in our hands. The soul is what we are. Every life, a word, the wind turns to say. And though trouble grows back like a beard, an unchained blood governs my tongue. I have seen the door that is not there still open. Thank you. Thank you very much.